personal finance during a pandemic, advice on filing taxes, saving for retirement, and more. For many of us, this year threw us personal finance curveballs. Maybe you had to raid your retirement savings or collect unemployment for the first time. Maybe you're wondering how the recession and recovery will affect your investments. Or perhaps you're asking yourself new questions as you file your tax returns this year. For example, is my stimulus check taxed? Can I write off my home office? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today's guest has answered all of these questions and more in her nationally syndicated newspaper column, The Color of Money. We welcome Michelle Singletary back to Maine Calling to answer your personal finance questions as we navigate our way through a pandemic and recession. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The pandemic has altered the personal finance picture for many people, and now it's tax season, which raises even more questions. To help us navigate this ship, we have an expert with us today. Michelle Singletary is an award-winning, nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She is also the author of The 21-Day Financial Fast. And of course, this is for you. We welcome your comments and questions about personal finance, taxes, and more. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Michelle, welcome back to Maine Calling. So nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
I want to start with a recent column you wrote expressing concerns over the IRS, its staffing, its outdated computer systems. And I'm wondering, how might that affect the regular taxpayer this year?
So normally during tax season, it's difficult to reach the IRS because lots of people have questions. Now you add on top of that all the slowdown because of the pandemic. People have to social distance and IRS employees have to social distance. And then there was a huge backlog from the delayed tax season last year. The IRS is still processing millions of 2019 returns. So you can imagine those people are calling on top of the normal number of people calling. So it's very difficult for people to reach the IRS if they have a question about their federal tax return.
All right. Well, let's I want to make it clear that this program today will be about personal finance broadly, and we welcome your personal finance questions broadly. But a couple more questions about this year and tax season, Michelle. I think a lot of people are facing situations that they maybe never have before. Maybe someone has filed for unemployment for the first time, for example, or has dipped into their retirement savings. So I'm wondering, I'll ask you about those specific situations. If someone has dipped or has taken unemployment, will that be taxed?
Yes, lots of people, and many for the first time, collected unemployment last year because they lost their job because of COVID-19. And so many of them don't realize that income is taxed. Now, when you sign up, they're supposed to tell you this, and you can elect to have money taken out of your unemployment benefit payments. But, you know, those checks aren't very large, and people say, well, I'll just deal with it later. And I'm afraid that there'll be a lot of people who, when they file their return, realize that they may owe money on this unemployment money that they received last year, including the boost payments that came under the CARES Act and the second stimulus package that was passed at the end of the last year.
So if I'm hearing this right now and I'm thinking, oh, no, I can't afford that. I cannot afford to pay taxes on unemployment benefits. I'm barely getting by. What do I do?
Well, if you do end up getting a tax bill the one thing I don't want you to do is call one of those places that you hear, oh, we can get rid of your tax debt for pennies on a dollar. Instead, you want to contact the IRS. Now, I know I just said there's a long line, but you can go online and set up a payment plan. It's fairly easy, and there's all the information right there on the IRS.gov to help walk you through this. And then you can still patiently wait online, try to call off hours to if you don't feel comfortable doing it online. But your first contact call or online at IRS.gov should be the IRS.
Let me ask you another question. Let's say you've dipped into your retirement savings account. You read that will not have the penalty that it would in other years. So how does it work now that it's tax time?
Yeah, under the CARES Act, because so many people are having trouble, they allow people to take up to $100,000 out of their retirement account. If you were under 59 and a half, you didn't have to pay, or you don't have to pay that 10% early withdrawal fee. Previous to this legislation, and normally now that we've gone back to it, if you take out money, if you're 59 and a half or younger, there's a 10% penalty. So that went away. The legislation also allowed you to pay back whatever you took over 3 years. So starting this year, you'd have to pay, part of that three-year payment that you now require to take. And this will give people a break, so all the money isn't due at once. If you want to do that, pay all of it, you might want to consider doing that if you have the money, if you set it aside, because especially if your income dropped in 2020, you have to pay less taxes. But if you don't have it and you need that 3 years, you are allowed to do that. And again, let's say you don't have the money. You took this money out and you didn't set aside the taxes. Again, you want to call the IRS. But what you don't want to do, I shouldn't say this is a double negative, what you should do is file your return even if you don't have the money to pay, because it's an additional penalty if you owe and you don't file your return.
All right. Somebody might see something new on their tax return this year, the recovery rebate credit. What is that?
So most people don't realize that the advance stimulus payments that they receive, those payments both from the first and second round, are actually a credit on your 2020 return. So that's what it's called, the recovery rebate credit. And so if you didn't get your full stimulus payment, if you didn't get a stimulus payment for whatever reason, and many people didn't, you now have to claim it on your 2020 return. You must file that return to get that stimulus money. The IRS says that they have sent out all the money they're going to send, and so if you are entitled to this, so say for example, in 2020 you had a child, well the IRS wouldn't have known that because they used your 2019 return either for the first or second stimulus payment. So you would claim that when you file your 2020 return. So if you didn't get your payment, you didn't get the full payment, you didn't get maybe the money for a kid, or your income dropped and now you qualify for a stimulus payment, you must file fully file your federal return. And on line 30, it's on the second page of the 1040, you'll see the place where you put in the money that you are owed as part of the stimulus relief.
We are talking with nationally syndicated personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary. If you have a question for her, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Michelle, I can't have you on without asking you about the whole GameStop story. What lessons do you hope we all learn from that? And what did you find interesting about it?
Well, whenever there's something like that, people are like, I need to buy. Obviously, that stock went up and people jumped on it. But, that's really speculation. That's not patient investing. You need to have a diversified portfolio and then wait time. I mean, time is your friend when it comes to investing. And so, lots of people got interested in investing because that stock went up. And but honestly, those people who become, say, 401k millionaires are people who've invested over a couple of decades, put money away every month to buy stocks, no matter what the stock market is doing. And so I think the lesson is, you know, stock investing should be boring. I mean, we think that whole episode was like, oh, this is so exciting. But those who really benefit from investing over the long term, just do it patiently and don't pay attention to when things spike. Because think about it, by the time it's spiking, you're going to be buying in high. And so I tell people do something called dollar cost averaging, where you take a certain amount of money that you invest every year. It's sort of just like when you do if you have a retirement plan. You take money out of your paycheck, every paycheck, to put into investing. And that's the safest and best way to invest for most people.
Michelle, I saw a really interesting article in the Wall Street Journal, which was some of the lessons of COVID, asking experts from around the country. And some are things that would not surprise you. One is, yes, emergencies happen. This was the lesson of the COVID pandemic. And so it is important to have emergency savings. But another one I thought that was interesting is a reminder of how important it is to have a will. I read that the founder of Zappos, who died recently, did not have a will. So even some of the most sophisticated people out there have neglected this important personal finance step or chapter in their lives.
It is. I mean, you know, I always ask people this question and they get it wrong. You know, how many people die without a will? And then people will say, oh, 95% and 99% or something very extremely high. But the fact of the matter is we all have a will. It's just not one that we've written. Every state has a way to disperse your assets if you pass away without having put a will in place for yourself. And so if you don't want the state to dictate how your money is going to be allocated, then you need to do a will. And it doesn't matter. I mean, people think it's a will is just for rich folks. But time and time again, we find, you know, Prince didn't have a will. Aretha Franklin had handwritten wills, and now her folks are in court. They're still in court long after her death. And if you have children, you know, especially children 18 and under, it's so important to have a will so that you know who will take care of them if something happens to you. And many people think, oh, well, you know, they'll just figure it out. But if you don't have a will, you can end up leaving, like, economic chaos for your family. I've been to funerals where people have been fighting over, you know, a plate that grandma had. And so people sometimes think, oh, I don't really have that much. You have enough that somebody's going to fight over something. And so put this in place now. It is so kind to do this for your family, to have your affairs in order.
Mm. And if you are listening right now and thinking, well, you know, I do have a will, but I wrote it 20 years ago. What would be some life events that would be a good idea to revisit that?
Definitely. So here's the thing, you know, things change over the time. You have children, you know, like, for example, my husband and I had a will and we had named someone as our, you know, to run our estate. And that person turned out to be not such a great person with money. And so we didn't find this out until years later. So we updated our will. You might have had a will and you only had one kid. Now you have three. And even though the language may say and include them, you want to be very specific. Oftentimes, people forget to change and update the beneficiaries. I have been a front row seat to someone who got divorced, got remarried, forgot to change the beneficiary on the life insurance policy. And so the ex got the insurance money, and now the widow is trying to fight to get money to pay for a funeral. Maybe you had your mama as your beneficiary. You started out as a young adult, and so you might put your mom or your dad as beneficiaries, but now you're married, and you know your mama don't like your wife or your husband. And so you want to be sure that you update that so that who you'd want to get your insurance money or your retirement money goes to the right people.
Mm. We have so many questions coming in that I'm going to start with some of them now. Ray on Facebook asks, what do you think about investing in index stock bonds for retirement or instead of mutual funds that have hidden fees?
So, you know, people are always like, what should you invest in? I can't really say that. I can't tell this person that because I don't know their full financial picture. Here's where I sort of pitch for hiring a fee-only financial planner who can look at all of your money, you know, your insurance policies, you know, your timeline, your risk factor to see what is appropriate for you. personally, I like just, you know, index funds. And I look for index funds that have low fees that would give me the diversification that I want. But I've developed that over talking to financial advisors based on what pensions I have, how much I'm going to get for Social Security. So rather than ask somebody what stock should I invest in or what index fund, you really need to have an overall picture of what's appropriate for you based on your risk tolerance, how long you have till you're going to need that money.
All right. We'll go to Chris, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I'm a big listener, a big fan. I do have a question. Last year, before everything went where it went, my stepdaughter was living in New York City as an actress and doing some modeling work, but didn't make enough to warrant a tax return. Yet, because of her age, and she's living here in Maine right now, it seems like she's eligible for a stimulus check. And what steps does she need to go through to get that?
So did you claim her as a dependent?
No, we did not.
Okay, so if she is self-supporting, but yeah, she didn't file a return, so they didn't have something to pull to pay her stimulus payment, then she would be eligible for the stimulus payment. The key is that the young adult is self-supporting and that no one has claims the person as a dependent or they're not paying more than 50% of their living expenses. So it sounds like she definitely qualifies. So she would qualify using that rebate recovery credit on line 30 for the $1,200, depending on her income. You know, it's based on your income, but it sounds like she does. She'd get the $1,200 from the first round, and she'd get the $600 from the second round. But she must file a return to get that money. So maybe she didn't make enough to file, but in order to get the stimulus money, she will have to file a tax return. Now, if she makes under $72,000, which sounds like she does.
Yeah, she does.
IRS has something called free file. So if you make less than that, you can get your federal return electronically filed using, you know, software by, you know, different preparers for free. And in some cases, the state return as well. But I have her go to IRS.gov, and right on the homepage, mm-hmm. there'll be a link for free file. She'll roll through, and you pick a provider, and you can file. My daughter just did that. I have a 25-year-old daughter, and she used free file. She's already filed her return. We no longer claim her as a dependent because last year she was mm-hmm. self-supporting, and she got the full, you know, amount of money. She's not making much. She's going to be you don't know my daughter, but she's going to be a social worker therapist, so she's not going to be earning very much, and so she qualified for the stimulus payment. So your daughter, your stepdaughter, I think you said, should be able to get all of that money.
All right. Thank you, Chris, so much for your call. Yeah. And we're going to move on. We'll go to Corinne calling from South Portland. How do you pronounce your name?
Hi, you got it right the first time.
Corinne. Okay, great. Yep. Go ahead.
I'm wondering about home offices and if we can claim them on our tax returns and how to do that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Corinne. Go ahead.
That's okay. I was just going to say, since so many of us have been working from home.
Yeah, that's a big question this year. So do you work for someone? So you're a wage earner?
I am, yeah.
So you do not qualify for the home office deduction. The tax code was changed in 2017 to eliminate a lot of deductions and such forth. And so if you work for an employer, and I know you're, you know, working from home and you're using your electricity and all that, but you cannot claim the home office deduction. If you're self-employed or independent contractor, you can. But if you work for someone, you cannot take the home office deduction. I know everybody's like, what? But that's because the laws were changed in 2017 to eliminate that. But, you know, most people qualify for the standard deduction, and so you kind of still get that benefit because the standard deductions were increased under that change.
Okay. Yep. Thank you so much.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Corinne. Yep, we are going to take a quick break. If you have a question for Michelle Singletary, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, please keep it brief, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Health. A network of hospitals, healthcare providers, and specialists built with your needs at the very center. MaineHealth.org.
First class the show, VIP backstage. Get ready to sport your highest heels and your snazziest coat. Because Steph Judgment's walking the red carpet. This week, we're on a plane. And spoiler alert, Rihanna's on a plane too. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
And you can hear Snap Judgment this evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to offer a paid internship this summer to a college or technical school student interested in a career in the journalism, digital news, or broadcasting fields. Candidates for the Jim Dow Internship Program should be attending an institution based in Maine or have an existing connection to the state. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org or contact our Human Resources Department at 800-884-1717. Our application deadline is March 7th.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Michelle Singletary, the award-winning nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, is our guest today, and we are talking personal finance. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now, John Paradise, who is Senior Vice President of Marketing, Communications, and Community Outreach for Town and Country Federal Credit Union. John, welcome back to the program. I understand this is America Saves Week. Tell me what that is, and what are your tips to get people to save smarter?
Well, it is, Jen, and thanks for having me back. It is America Saves Week. And, you know, I think if nothing else, theme weeks, they get people talking and thinking about important topics. And, you know, of course, few are better, if any, than Michelle Singletary. So it's great to hear people talking about personal finance. But America Saves Week is really about doing something. And I think in light of all the financial challenges that people have gone through, and, you know, people are still going through them, you know, a year into this pandemic and probably for the foreseeable future. But I think if they can start thinking about changing some of those habits, and that's what America Saves Week is all about. You know, we're looking at different ways that they can do it. One is start saving something, save and make it automated. There, you know, the use of technology these days can do some great things, especially when it comes to financial services. And I think if people can set a small amount, you don't have to, you know, aim for the sky. Start small. If you can only save $5 or $10 a paycheck, great. That's better than doing nothing. And, you know, I think if you set it and forget it, you won't miss it and you won't see it. So, and then you'll watch it add up pretty quickly. I think another important aspect of America Saves Week, another tip certainly, is start saving for retirement. If no matter what your age is, you know, assuming that you're not retired already, but if you can start young, that's the best. I can remember as a 21-year-old kid, my dad saying, you know, I want you to open an IRA. And I'm like, no, that's my money. I want to use it to waste. But he insisted, I did. And here I am 35 years later. You know, I've watched my nest egg grow quite significantly.
Thanking your dad, yeah.
If you can start it earlier, it'll add up pretty quickly. And, you know, I think some other tips that are important is look at what you're spending. Look at the money management piece of it and have an idea of what's going out, what's coming in. Do an assessment and it'll get you thinking about, well, do I really need coffee 4 or 5 days a week? Maybe I only need two. Do I need 5 streaming services? Maybe I only need one. You know, you can watch and trim some things out that maybe you don't really need, and maybe your money is going out the window that way. So,
well, John, thank you. Yeah. And thank you. Go ahead quickly. Yeah.
The last thing I would encourage people to do is talk about it as a family. Finances can be fun as a family. And if you get people started young, they'll become much more likely to become successful financially as adults. And thanks again for the opportunity, Jen. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, John. At John Paradise with Town and Country Federal Credit Union. Michelle, your book spoke about some of these tips. What would you like to add to what John told us?
Well, what I love about what they're doing is that just making sure people understand the importance of saving. Even if I know some people are thinking, I just don't have it. But even $5, $25 will help and go a long way. I have been a huge fan of the American Saves Initiative for many, many years. And it's such an important lesson, something that I learned from my grandmother when I got my first tutoring job at the age of 14. She taught me to put away money from any amount of money that I bring in, even if it's a dollar, she'd say, put 10 cents away. And if you develop that habit early, it will help save you. Now, you know, this pandemic has been so brutal that you could have been a great saver and did everything right and still not have enough. But at least you could tread water a little bit longer every dollar that you were able to save.
Mm. As Ben Franklin said, right?
Yeah.
A penny saved.
An
email here from Mike. There's all kinds of fear-mongering in the financial media that we could see a rise in inflation. There is no real evidence for this other than sinking bond prices. What's your take on this? And should I just tune out the noise and stick with my current bond allocation at 40%? I'm 60 years old and planning to retire sometime in the next 5 years.
So again, what he's asking is basically when you invest, you want to be sure that some of your money is going to be there when you need it. So you divide it up. So you're going to have money. Now, even at 60, you know, the odds are that you're going to still live for maybe another 20, 30, or even 40 years. I know it sounds crazy, right? But people are living longer. And so you want to still have your money grow and keep pace with inflation. But you also want to have some money off the table that's a little safer so that, you know, like last March when the market was crazy, imagine if you were retiring right then and there, you wouldn't have wanted to have all of your money in stocks at the time that it was dipping if you needed to pull it away. So again, the idea is to meet with someone, or just if you don't have the money or you don't want to do that, just look over what you have. Where am I going to pull money if the market is down? So you want to have some savings. You want to have part of your investment in a place where it wouldn't create a loss if you had to pull the money out. So, you know, experts say you want to have maybe 3 to 5 years of money in something that is relatively safe or not subject to wild swings, like bonds or cash or CDs. And then the rest of the money, you do want to still have it grow. You know, we've had low inflation for several years. But, you know, it doesn't matter how low it is. If the bank is only paying you like less than 1% and inflation is 1%, you're actually losing money by not having it in something that will at least keep pace with inflation. That is, and I don't know if that's fear-mongering. It's just being, you know, wise and prudent. And I get what he's trying to say, that we're like, you're going to like be not great if you don't have all this money. And that does scare the bejesus out of people. And then sometimes it has the opposite effect of people thinking, well, I'll never be able to save anything, so I shouldn't do anything. So what I'm telling you to do is I always live like I'm in a recession. I'm a little crazy. And so I have pots of money that will tide me over while the economy does what it does. Either it's up or it's down or it's stagnant. So I have pots that are going to help care for me. I don't care what that money earns because it's my safety money. But the other money's for my retirement, for my kids' college funds, I have invested so that that money can buy what I need down the road, which is why you want to pay close attention to inflation, whatever inflation is.
I'm going to go to Dennis, who's calling from Topsom. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead.
Oh, listen, I think this is a wonderful conversation, and particularly for younger people. But I want to just talk about living debt-free. I was given that gift, that knowledge from my father years ago, and one day, not that long ago, I decided to pay off everything I owned by reaching into the money in mutual funds. I took the ones that were doing very well, and I paid off my $1,300 a month mortgage, which then enabled me to help my kids as they were developing in ways. And I assumed that, and it worked out, that over the course of time, I'd be able to re-earn that money that I'd taken out to pay off that debt. And the economy's kind of funky and all that, but overall it's worked out quite well. So my thought is maybe you should talk about people taking some of their money they've got in mutual funds and paying off their overhead and living debt-free. What do you think?
I joke that if debt was a person, I'd slap it. I loathe debt, and I have never thought that there was good debt and bad debt. It's all debt. And I think your father taught you well, Dennis, and my grandmother taught me the exact same thing. She taught me how to loathe, hate, want to kill debt. And so, and I've taught that to my children. My husband and I decided when we were having children that we would save as much, we would do whatever it takes, live below our means, you know, forfeit vacations so that we could save to send them to college with no debt. And we have achieved that. We have won through, no debt, even graduate school. My son is about to graduate undergrad, no debt. My daughter, thankfully, she got a bunch of scholarship money, but we have all the money to save. If all of those scholarships went away, we still could get her through debt-free. And we have extra because they did so well and got some money to pay for graduate school. You know, in a crisis right now, if you don't have that debt weight on your shoulders, you can maybe eat through this economy that has been ravaged by the COVID-19 a little bit better. Now, do you have to take on debt? Most of us can't buy a home without debt. And many of you can't even buy a car, although I maintain that you really only need one car loan in your entire life. If you can't afford to save up initially when you start out, you get a car loan. But after that, you should never need another car loan. Because if you take that money that you were paying for that car loan and save it and then keep your car for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, by the time you need a new car, you have that money to purchase a car with cash so you don't have any debt. And I, you know, it's funny, I was just talking to my young daughter who just finished her master's degree and is about to start in her life. And I was, my heart just jumped when she says, well, mommy, because we gave her a car, you know, used car when she was 16. She still has it, by the way. And she says, well, when I turn 30, I want to buy a new car. And what she said next, I just like, oh. She said, but mommy, I'm going to start saving now so I can pay cash for that car in 4 or 5 years. And I thought, I've done my job right, because she said, I don't want a car loan. I don't want any loans. And I just think that is the way to start off her young adult life. And but if you have debt, I am not judging you. You did what you did, you know, but do what you can to get out of it as soon as possible. And like what Dennis says, you know, the thing about it is that if you do this as a form of life, you know, encouraging your kids and yourself not to get debt, when a crisis hits, because folks, we're going to come out of this pandemic, this too shall pass, but there will be another one. But the less debt you have, the better you are able to weather that storm.
Mm. Michelle, let me ask you, though, about mortgage, because the interest rates are so low and the mortgage rates interests are much lower than the money you could be earning if that same money were in, for example, a 401k or an IRA.
So I'm sorry, I didn't hear all of that. Can you say that again?
Just talking about debt, but also comparing that against the mortgage interest rates right now, maybe somebody having the choice between paying off a mortgage or investing that money into a retirement plan.
So, you know, I always like to kind of go down two parallel streets. So, one, you want to try to get out of debt. And I personally, my goal is to get out of mortgage debt by the time my husband and I retire, so we don't have take that into retirement. I separate those decisions. You should buy a house when it's time for you to buy a house. Forget about what the rates are. Forget about if prices are up or down. You need to look at your own personal budget. Can I handle this debt? Because, hey, listen, even if, say, the mortgage was 0%, right? That's not going to happen. But let's say it's 0%. But if you've lost your job, you still got that debt even at 0%. So, again, you want to look at what can you handle in your budget. And then if you say, yeah, I can handle a house now, interest rates are lower, you think, okay, so now this is the time to take advantage of that. But you don't want to lean into that if you're not ready. For example, I'm going to say this, and people are going to probably light up your phone lines, you know, think this woman is crazy. But I think if you have a ton of student loan debt and credit card debt and car loans, that you need to pause before you buy a house. I want you to walk through those doors without that student loan debt, without that car loan, without those credit cards. I've purchased, what is it now, 3 or 4 homes, and I have never gone into those doors with any debt on my books. So if you've got especially if you got 6-figure college loans, you already have a mortgage. I want you to get out of that debt as soon as possible. Now, you're probably saying, well, Michelle, I'm not going to get a house until I'm 80. And I don't believe that's true either. I have worked with couples and individuals who had a boatload of student loan debt. And over 3 or 4 years, we just cut everything. They actually, in one case, a couple with children moved in with another family member, and for 3 or 4 years paid off all their debt. They saved up enough that by the time they left that relative's house, they could buy their house outright. It is possible. It takes a lot of discipline, a lot of self-sacrificing, but it can be done.
Thank you for your question. We are going to take another quick break. We are speaking with Michelle Singletary. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood's My Fish Dish, lemon and pesto buttered Atlantic salmon and 3 other varieties found in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
I'm Jane Clayson. Many people have had trouble trying to book a vaccine appointment, like reporter Deborah Wong's mother, a retired neuroscientist.
She's super capable. She uses a computer. She tried for a number of days to get an appointment, but eventually she just threw up her hands and said, forget it, it's not worth it.
Vaccine frustration next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. From the Top is a national radio program that shares stories and performances of outstanding classically trained musicians ages 8 to 18. And here on Maine, From the Top is heard every Saturday afternoon at 5 on Maine Public Classical. And on March 12th and 13th, From the Top will be holding virtual auditions for young musicians from Maine. If you're interested in auditioning or know a young Maine musician who might be, please visit fromthetop.org/apply. Again, that's fromthetop.org/apply for all the details.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. My guest today, Michelle Singletary, who is award-winning personal finance columnist for The Washington Post and the author of The 21-Day Financial Fast. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-356. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Michelle, you are popular. We have so many calls coming in. I'm going to try to get to as many as possible. We'll go to Jane calling from Limerick. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. We are an elderly couple, and every single thing we own and all our accounts are in both our names. All our properties are both our names right down the line. Do we still, and we don't have anybody to leave anything to, do we still need to have a will?
Absolutely. You most definitely. And a will isn't just about the stuff you own. Let's say one of you becomes incapacitated or both of you. You want to be able to say what you want to happen. You want to have someone designated to make health care decisions for you. So as part of the will package, you'd have sort of what they call health care proxies. But listen, you may not think that you have something that you want to leave to someone. Maybe you don't have children or relatives, but you could leave your money to charity. Or maybe there's some distant relative or friend, or maybe the children of some of your friends. So you want to lay all of this out, because don't you want you and your husband probably work really hard for what you have. Don't you want to decide where that goes? I mean, not the state. And so you can plan. You can have an estate plan that lays this all out. And particularly if you travel together, you know, God forbid something happens and you're both, you know, incapacitated or pass away, you want to have someone designated to take care of your affairs. And I know there are many people listening, it's like raising their hand, like, oh, I could use that money. But, you know, think about the things that you value, you know, some charitable organizations, maybe a college that you went to, a university, a community college, or a food bank. All of them could benefit from you having an estate plan.
Jane, thank you so much for your question. I'm sure many people had that question. I have a message here from Ray. Our daughter is going to college and living with us. Can we claim her on our taxes?
I'm sorry, Jennifer, again, the sound.
I'm sorry. Yeah, our daughter is going to college and living with us. Can we claim her on our taxes?
So, you know, the test is whether or not you providing 50% or more of her expenses. And if she's living with you, that probably meets that test, right? Because she's living under your roof, and she's probably not charging her for groceries. And so if you're not quite sure, you know, meet with a tax professional. But all the software will walk you through and ask you a bunch of questions to determine whether or not this person is a dependent. But, you know, what you just told me, she probably is. You know, self-supporting is they take care of all the expenses. They're paying you rent. They're buying their food, all those kind of things. They're, you know, you're probably covering her insurance. So all of that is the test that, like, all my kids were our dependents until the oldest one finished college. So I think the age is 24. But you can have an adult person who is still a dependent if you're paying all their expenses. So there, if you go to irs.gov, there's all kinds of information about, you know, the dependent test, the residency test, whether or not you can take someone as a dependent. I would encourage you to go there, irs.gov, and or meet with a tax professional. And a lot of the do-it-yourself software will walk you through all of these questions to determine whether or not you can take that person as a dependent.
We'll go to Pam calling from Westbrook. Hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm over 70 years old and retired, and I accidentally threw out my recent $600 stimulus payment. It went to the landfill. What is my recourse? Is it just lost, or is it line 30 on the tax return, or is there some other route?
Yeah, was it a check or a debit card?
It was a check.
Oh, my goodness, you poor thing. So you should be able to claim it on that line 30. I would say go ahead and do it. The IRS has told me that they're going to be going through the returns and kind of reconciling things, that if you never cash a check, normally you'd have to sort of file a form to make sure that the check wasn't cashed. But I think given what's going on, if you never cashed it, but that's a really good question. If the check... I've asked the IRS this number of times. I would think that you would claim it, and then the IRS would work it out. If for some reason they send you a letter, say, hey, we made the check, and then you can file a form that says, hey, the check was lost, and then still get that money. So I guess the bottom line is you're going to still be able to get your money. You might have to jump through a couple of hoops, but let's start by trying to claim it on your 2020 return since you never cashed the check.
Okay, and thank you much.
Good luck, Pam. We'll go to Tim, who's calling from New Jersey. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question about portfolio and rebalancing. I've been saving for about 20 or 30 years, and I have my assets diversified in different asset groups. But I have never been able to organize myself well enough to do proper rebalancing. Twice a year or once a year or what have you. And I'm wondering, what do you think of hiring advisor services from a company like Vanguard that only charge a 0.3% to do something like driving the rebalancing of a portfolio? Is that worth it? Is that cost minimal enough?
Well, you know, now don't back me into a corner and tell me who you have to hire. So I would say that if you're asking that question, it means that you need someone to look over your shoulder. And who that person is, what company, will depend on what you want to do and how you want to pay. I encourage fee only. I'm not going to endorse one company or another. That wouldn't be prudent for me to do that. But many companies like Vanguard and Fidelity and companies like that have, you know, very low advisory fees where they'll look over your portfolio and tell you whether or not they think you're appropriate for your risk tolerance. They'll look at other things. You might want to hire a fee-only planner and pay an hourly fee to have someone just say, hey, I've been doing this by myself. I've been doing pretty well. Am I on track? That's what my husband and I did. We hired someone, paid a set fee. They looked over and they go, oh, you guys are great. What are you calling me for? But it's okay to get that second opinion. So I would say that you're asking that question means that you do want a second opinion, and I think it's quite appropriate for you to get that. And it's also appropriate for you to be paying attention on how much that advice is going to cost you.
Tim, thank you for your question. We're going to go to Meredith, who writes this on Facebook. Weighing in on saving money, I'm in my 40s and never had any savings throughout most of my adult life. My strategy now that has worked for me is having my paycheck directly deposited into my savings account. On the first of the month, I only draw exactly what I need to cover my bills for that month and put that into my checking. After a year now, I have a safety net, and it's growing, and I'm 100% debt-free. Next month, I'm talking to a financial advisor to help me invest. It's never too late to start saving and investing.
That's a great story. I love that. I mean, I do it the reverse way. I put all my money in my household checking and then farm that money out to the things that I want to pay, like the kids' college fund and retirement. But either way, what this person is saying, which I hope other people are hearing, is that you got to have a plan. My grandmother used to say every penny ought to have a purpose. I have no disposable income, meaning I don't have income that I don't know what I'm going to do with. When my husband and I get our paychecks, it goes to the places that we wanted to go: retirement, the kids' college fund, our emergency fund. We have something called a Life Happens Fund, which is different from the emergency fund, because the emergency fund is if one of us loses our job. The Life Happens Fund, the car breaks down and it's a $1,200 car repair, money right there in the account. And so you want to send your money off like little troops to do what you want. And that means that you're putting your financial values first. Every penny ought to have a purpose. Every dollar that comes in, you tell it where it needs to go. And if you do that, you will have more financial security over time.
We'll go to Trish calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Trish. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Michelle. I've forwarded so many of your columns to my kids over the years. I think you set them on the right track. But I'm actually calling because I'm worried about someone who's 65 now and has too high an interest rate on their mortgage, but they're having trouble through banks getting refinancing. Are there any programs for seniors who can help them refinance their homes now at lower interest rates when they're not drawing an income stream?
Yeah, that's very difficult. But, you know, this whole refinance thing, you actually can kind of do your own refinance by making principal payments. Which is, you know, why, you know, early in the program I talked about my goal, my husband and I's goal, to always get rid of the mortgage before we retire. But, you know, life happens. You don't get there. So if they can, I don't know of any programs, because it all depends on what they're bringing in. And obviously the lenders are saying, this might be too risky for us. But if they got that money and extra to put on that principal, you can sort of achieve the same goal. So if you make principal payments every month or every year, you can reduce what you owe and achieve the same thing as a refinance. That's what my husband and I did for most of our mortgages before. I mean, we might have refinanced maybe once or twice and always down, like we didn't reset it to 30 years. And then we make principal payments on the amount. So even if you can only afford $100, just do that. That will lower the amount that you're paying, because ultimately the goal is to pay less interest and get out of that debt as quick as possible. So I wouldn't have this person, if they keep getting turned down, not to be so stressed. If there's extra money in, I think you said her budget, to have her make principal payments as often as she can, that will help reduce that mortgage and help get her out of that mortgage as soon as possible.
So Trish, thanks for
the situation. Okay, it's a very high mortgage rate. They don't have the income stream, so they don't have any money. There are no programs for seniors, though, to help in that kind of financial stress.
Well, she might be eligible for a reverse mortgage. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
And so in her case, if there's no extra money and it's just the payments are crazy, she could consider reverse the mortgage. So you take out the mortgage, and just like the name says, so she wouldn't make any mortgage payments. And then if she passes away or moves or sells the home, then the bank would, that's when the loan is paid off. So it sounds like she might be a good candidate for a reverse mortgage.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Trish. We'll go up to Wyndham and Bruce. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
You were speaking earlier about people taking money out of the retirement and paying tax over 3 years. The one drawback is that people are going to get their refund in this year and not have the taxes in the next 2 years to pay the tax liability.
Well, so the way it works is you got 3 years to pay that money back. So you might be getting a refund. You may not. So you look at your individual tax situation. But, you know, people did what they felt they had to do. I try to discourage people from taking money out of their retirement plan. But if you lost your job and there's no money coming in or not enough through unemployment, you do what you have to do to keep the roof over your head and food on the table. And at that point, if you pull money in, I hope that you set money aside for taxes. But if you didn't and you end up having a tax bill and there's not enough refund coming in to cover that tax bill, then you put yourself on a payment plan with the IRS and you pay it off. This is hard times and people make difficult decisions, decisions that maybe you and I wouldn't have made. And maybe we didn't have to make it because we planned to have money for times like this. But I try not to wag my finger at people during financial crisis. It doesn't help them. It doesn't make them feel good. People make bad decisions all the time. I make bad decisions, and I'm a really good money manager. So all I can do is try to help you see that you do what you have to do. But please, guys, listen to this program. Read the business section of your local paper. Inform yourself. You know, participate in America Saves. Do all the kinds of things that will help put you in a position where if another crisis happens, and it will, you don't have to pull money out of your retirement plan because that money should be there and stay there for when you retire. And that's the purpose of that pot, right? And so we've been talking about pots and how to plan, and I don't want you to have to tap that pot. But if you did, and you end up having to get a tax bill, don't exacerbate the situation by calling one of these debt companies. Just call the IRS or go online and get on a payment plan. And you know what? Over time, you can correct yourself and get back on a safe financial road.
Bruce, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Vince in Belgrade. Vince, we're really tight on time, so if you could ask your question quickly.
Yes, thank you. I received the first credit, recovery credit. I didn't receive the second one, and I did not receive a 14444 notice for either one. I'm doing my taxes now. I'm kind of lost without the 144.
Michelle, is that what line 30 is for?
Well, no. What he's saying is when the stimulus payments are sent out, the IRS was charged with sending people out a notice that says what they got. There's a lot of backlogs, so I'm not sure why you didn't get the notice. If you can set up an IRS tax account, you can go in and get that notice if it was issued. In terms of the second payment, it could be that they didn't finish processing the return. All kinds of reasons why you might not have gotten the second stimulus payment, but you can claim it on your 2020 return. Do the calculations as a worksheet instructions on the 1040. If you have a do-it-yourself software, it'll walk you through that, and it'll tell you whether or not you qualify for the second stimulus payment. You put that amount on that line 30, and you claim that credit, and you should get that money unless you owe the IRS.
Vince, thank you for your question, and good luck to you. And Michelle Singletary, thank you so much for taking an hour with us today. She is a nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Today's sound engineer, George Thomas. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Zoom fatigue and the psychology of virtual communication. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.